While Haig was the champion of the working class, providing jobs and health care, he was not a champion of labor unions. Like many in his patriotic Irish constituency, he had suspicions about the Congress of Industrial Organizations, which was launching an aggressive campaign to organize unskilled workers in Jersey City.
It was also in the back of his mind,
Richard Connors,
a little fear here that the communists or socialists might get moving over from New York City into Jersey City, into his city, into Haigville. So what he did basically was to resolve that the New York City left-wingers were not going to move into Jersey City.
Norman Thomas was the socialist candidate for president. He ran against Franklin Delano Roosevelt, didn't have a chance, but he ran against him. And he came here to Jersey City during Haig's battle, which got national publicity, his battle with the CIO.
The most famous episode in Haig's crusade against the CIO came on May Day, 1938, when Norman Thomas attempted to speak at a rally in support of the CIO. Jersey City historian Bob Leach.
So Norman Thomas arrived at Journal Square. He came by private automobile into Jersey City. He was recognized. You know, he was a celebrity. His face was well known. He had run for president. He got out of his car and attempted to make a speech. Haig's cops took him. They slapped him around. They put him into a squad car. They brought him down to the Pavonia Ferry and put him on a ferry boat back to New York. This made, in fact, there's a headline from the Daily News. Oh, yeah. Here in the Sunday News, the Daily News, New York's picture newspaper, the date is Sunday, May 1st, 1938, and the price of the newspaper is 5 cents. It says, NJ cops kidnap Norman Thomas. It was referred to as a kidnapping because the cops did not file any charges against Thomas. They grabbed him bodily and took him away.
Norman Thomas was involved in many battles for unionization. But when he recorded a memoir on his 75th birthday, his run-in with the Haig organization stood out.
I was forcibly deported from Jersey City by Mayor Haig's police, and a week later egged by his organized bully boys at a meeting in Military Park, Newark. If any picture of me is handed down to posterity, it will likely be one showing an egg landing on my forehead with other missiles in the air. I'm told that the picture is in some school textbooks.
Later, Mayor Haig was to have egg on his face. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Haig was not the law when it came to silencing the CIO in Jersey City. But what offended the Supreme Court did not offend Haig's constituents.
This thrilled the people of Jersey City.
Again, historian Bob Leach.
Everybody likes to see a strong arm of government throwing a communist out of town. So again, the people, although Haig suppressed free speech, there's no doubt he did that, the people rallied behind Haig.
When it came to tough tactics, Mayor Haig never asked his police department to do anything he wouldn't do himself. Writer Thomas Fleming.
Haig was not above using physical violence. When he lost his temper, the story went that he kicked one of his commissioners in the crotch, and the guy died a few weeks later, supposedly from causes related to this injury, but it was all hushed up. But there's definitely stories of people being kicked and slugged right there in the mayor's office of City Hall. And he was not above having his cops use nightsticks on people who would get out on street corners and think that they could make speeches denouncing Mayor Haig.
There was an iron worker from the South. His name was Jeff Burkett.
Bob Leach.
He made street corner speeches against Haig. People would come out at night to see him get beat up. He would come out, and the Haig's goons would grab him and beat him up. And Haig very seldom laughed, but on one occasion, Burkett came down to City Hall to ask Mayor Haig, you know, give me one little street corner where I can talk. I'll talk, you know, on the edge of the meadows. And Burkett was bandaged and had a black eye, and his nose was bandaged, and Haig busted out laughing as enjoying what his cops had done to Jeff Burkett.
Frank Haig understood that if he didn't control the courts, he was vulnerable. So to protect his empire, Haig made sure he knew what Republican prosecutors were up to. Writer Thomas Fleming remembers that his uncle, Al Gallagher, was helpful to Frank Haig in legal matters.
He spent the better part of, I would say, 20 years on the grand jury. And whatever the grand jury was discussing, sometimes there was a Republican prosecutor, but the sheriff of Hudson County was always a Democrat, and he picked the grand jury. So there would be Uncle Al on the grand jury listening to the Republican prosecutor saying, we're going to do X, Y, Z, we're going to raid this place, we're going to do that, and now, gentlemen of the grand jury, I hope you authorize me to do this or whatever, and so forth. And my Uncle Al would go home, and that night he'd pick up the phone and call my father and say, here's what they're going to do, blah, 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 blah.
Haig felt invulnerable for prosecution, because not only did he have Tom Fleming's uncle, Al Gallagher, planted inside the grand jury, but he controlled the judges. This was the corrupt system that came to be known as Jersey justice. Again, socialist candidate for president Norman Thomas.
Incidentally, at different times, two New Jersey judges told me when I was fighting Frank Haig that there weren't five judges, state or federal, in New Jersey at that time who would decide against Frank Haig in a case in which he was vitally interested.
Haig controlled the courthouses by controlling the state house. In the period between 1920 and 1940, he handpicked three of five New Jersey governors. Tom Fleming.
The judges were all appointed, and no judge got appointed in New Jersey, at least by a Democratic governor, or by anybody, certainly in Jersey City, no judge got appointed without Haig's okay. So they owed him.
Dominating the Jersey courts, Haig occasionally forgot that he was not the law everywhere.
Yeah, I do remember that incident. I found some correspondence on it, and Farley told me about this personally.
In 1938, Postmaster General and Roosevelt confidant Jim Farley got wind of a mail tampering scheme by Haig's henchmen to suppress the CIO. Years later, he told political scientist Lyle Dorset all about it.
In Haig's desire to destroy certain labor leaders whom he was convinced were tied into the communists, he had people opening their mail looking for evidence. It was an early day equivalent of wiretapping, trying to find some evidence. Farley, as Postmaster General of the United States, learned about this because somebody in Hudson County tipped him off to what was happening. He was so furious, he said, this is a federal offense, this is a felony. He went into the president and said, this man needs to be prosecuted. And Roosevelt told him, you go up there and you tell him to knock it off, but we're not going to prosecute him. He said, yeah, put a stop to it, but we're not going to prosecute him. Because at that time, Roosevelt needed the electoral votes out of New Jersey. And Haig could deliver them, and he didn't want to upset this.